It is true that whatever relationship a particular devotee has with the Lord is the best for him. Still, when we study all the different methods from a neutral position, we can understand that there are higher and lower degrees of love. I'm going to start with Mangalarchanam because the purport is long. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadha Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 So I'm going to read the translation for 82 and 83, continuing discussions between Ramananda Rai and Lord Chaitanya. And Ramananda Rai has just, before this, explained to Lord Chaitanya that conjugal love is the highest mellow. And he's describing the pastimes of the gopis. In verse 82, he says, there are various means and processes by which one may attain the favor of Lord Krishna. All those transcendental processes will be studied from the viewpoint of comparative importance. Verse 83, it is true that whatever relationship a particular devotee has with the Lord is the best for him. Still, when we study all the different methods from a neutral position, we can understand that there are higher and lower degrees of love. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. So the purport's got two distinct topics that Srila Prabhupada talks about. So I'm going to take them in parts. I'm going to read half the purport now, and we can discuss, and then I'll do the second half. So the purport. In this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that this verse does not advocate the whimsical invention of some methods of love of Godhead. Such inventions cannot be accepted as topmost. Indeed, such concoctions are not recommended in these verses. Srila Rupa Goswami has said in the Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidhim Vina Ekantiki Hare Bhaktir Upatayaiva Kalpate. He clearly mentions in this verse that one must refer to the Vedic literatures and other supplementary literatures and follow the conclusion of the Vedas. An invented devotional attitude simply creates disturbance in the transcendental realm. If a person overly addicted to family life takes to Srimad Bhagavatam or Krishna consciousness to earn a livelihood, his activity is certainly offensive. One should not become a caste guru and sell mantras for the benefit of mundane customers, nor should one make disciples for a livelihood. All these activities are offensive. One should not make a livelihood by forming a professional band to carry out congregational chanting, nor should one perform devotional service when one is attached to mundane society, friendship, and love. Nor should one be dependent on so-called social etiquette. All of this mental speculation. All of this is mental speculation. None of these things can be compared to unalloyed devotional service. No one can compare unalloyed devotional service, Krishna consciousness, to mundane activities. There are many unauthorized parties pretending to belong to the Sri Chaitanya cult, and some are known as Ola, Bola, Kartabhaja, Neda, Daravesha, Sani, Sahajya Sakhi Bheki, Smarta, Jati Goshani, Ativadi, Chutadhari, and Gauranga Nagari. Moreover, there are those who take the caste Goswami's opinions of such parties as bona fide, comparing these opinions to those of the six Goswamis, headed by Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatan. This is simply another cheating process. There are also non-devotees who compose unauthorized songs, who establish different temples for money, who worship the deity as priests for salaries, who accept caste Brahmanism as all in all, and who do not know the value of a pure Vaishnava. Actually, the caste Brahmins of the Smartha community are opposed to the principles of Sattvat Pancharatra. Furthermore, there are many Mayavadis and those overly addicted to material sense enjoyment. None of these can be compared to a person who is purely engaged in preaching Krishna consciousness. Every Krishna conscious person is constantly endeavoring to utilize different transcendental devices in the service of the Lord. Such a devotee renounces all material enjoyment and completely dedicates himself to the service of the spiritual master and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He may be a perfect celibate, a restrained householder, a regulated vanaprast, or a tridandi sannyasi in the renounced order. It doesn't matter. The pseudo-transcendentalists and the pure devotees cannot be compared, nor can one argue that a person can invent his own way of worship. So I'm going to stop there and we'll carry on with the rest because it goes into a completely different topic. This topic of that Srila Prabhupada has brought up in terms of our motive for approaching Krishna and the different groups that on the surface may appear to also be Vaishnavas. When I first read that and I read the different groups and the names of the different groups, the thought crossed my mind, you know, we live in England. We don't have to come across these different groups so often. We may meet the odd person here or there who tells you that they are part of a different Gaudiya Math or Gaudiya Vaishnav group or a Vaishnav group. So what is the relevance? So, you know, those of you who are unfamiliar, we have Vanipedia, we have VedaBase, we have so many resources online. I mean, you know, more often than not, unfortunately, I hear from people that there's controversial statements everywhere and websites criticizing. But actually, we will find what we look for. And if you want to really dive deep into the topics, it's easier than ever before. Everything's been cross-referenced for us so easily. So I found Srila Prabhupada's class from 1969 on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day. And he brings up this topic of the different ways in which something can appear to be the same but has very different results because the motive for sharing it, the motive for taking it up is very different. You know, motive has a huge impact on the result of our actions. Intention has a huge impact on the result of our actions. So in this class, Srila Prabhupada explains, you know, because if Lord Chaitanya only came 500 years ago, we may wonder, how did things get modified? Why did all these different groups crop up? So Srila Prabhupada explains in this class that actually it's about 250 years after Lord Chaitanya left. This is the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and that's Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master's father. At that time, so Prabhupada explains that there's 13 significant groups had cropped up who had different opinions on who should be allowed to practice Krishna consciousness by birth, by caste, by color, by race, and what the process should be and what the goal should be. And so Prabhupada, you know, he's listed these for us. But he explains that the reason they came about is because, you know, in that 250-year time span, we didn't just have Lord Chaitanya's associates, but we have their associates' disciples, and then disciples' disciples, and then their disciples' families. And so people become attached to different ways of considering themselves a devotee. Right? This this verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.2.101, the actual translation for that is, even if a person seems to have attained steadiness in practicing pure bhakti to the Lord, seems to have attained steadiness, that bhakti is a misfortune if it rejects the rules of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra due to a lack of faith in them. So this first half of this purport, where Srila Prabhupada is bringing up these different groups, even if on the surface it may seem like it's irrelevant to our particular time, place, and circumstance, he's doing one very great task, important task of the spiritual master, which is to give us warning. Right? We often look to teachers, gurus, for inspiration, for guidance, yeah, and for results. We want results, but they also give us warnings. So this first half of this purport is a warning. So he's explaining, so in this class he explains that, so these groups had cropped up, and actually they'd given, they'd taken the result of conjugal love, because if you read CC separately, independently of having a strong foundation in Bhagavad Gita, independently of having a strong foundation in Bhagavatam, independent of devotee association, and independent of guidance from guru, it can read as a sentimental love affair. And people can adopt it. They can take it on, think, yeah, the goal of spiritual life is to just mimic Krishna's pastimes in this lifetime. And people very easily, it's one of the faults, you know, four faults of the human condition, is we have a cheating propensity. And so he's explained that the danger this was causing was so, it was so tenuous that even Vivekananda, he actually says, even Vivekananda, he also criticized, this is 250 years ago, Vaishnavism is sex religion. So this was really breaking Bhaktivinoda Thakura's heart. The same way Lord Chaitanya was feeling desperate that, you know, these places of Vrindavan's been buried. I can't find Krishna's pastime. So he asked the Goswamis to excavate and find the places of Krishna's pastime. So in the same way, Bhaktivinoda Thakura was wondering, how can we rediscover, reestablish the true teachings of Lord Chaitanya? And he needed help. He needed help. So Prabhupada's explaining, just like Advaita Acharya cried out for Lord Chaitanya to come, so Bhaktivinoda Thakura cried out for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to come. And he came as his son. So a lot of, he's glorifying Srila Prabhupada on the appearance day of his spiritual master. He is glorifying him, saying that actually he came at a very important time in this culture of reestablishing bhakti in this period of this mini golden age. He came at a time when the odds were stacked against us in a very different way, because once the roots of the philosophy or the roots of a plant are destroyed, the plant just doesn't grow in the same way. So he came to correct things. And it wasn't easy. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakura himself, we talk about spiritual espionage in warfare, right? Who is the agent who really has an impact? It's the one who's hidden in plain sight, right? So this was Bhaktivinoda Thakura. He was a real expert. He even penned books under a different name, so people in other groups would accept his teachings. And he straightened out their wonky thinking, their wonky interpretation. So, you know, Prabhupada actually says in this class, he says, you know, there's 13 of these groups. If I describe all 13, it will take 13 hours. So he only goes into actually Jat Goswami, and he focuses on the caste Goswamis, really emphasizing that the caste Goswamis are doing the opposite of what Lord Chaitanya wanted. They were trying to establish that actually you can only have pure bhakti based on your birth, on your caste, on the occupation that you do, on the work that you do, all based on externals. Whereas if you look in CC, we read CC, Lord Chaitanya completely breaks that down. Completely breaks it down. We have Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, who were actually rejected by the same Brahmin community for taking employment under the Muslims and the Muslim government. They had a very high post, very high post. They didn't accept Haridas Thakur, who actually Lord Chaitanya established as Arnamacharya, because he took birth in a Muslim family. So they're doing the opposite. They're basically closing down the doors of spiritual life based on something external. And so this causes a disturbance. So this warning that Srila Prabhupada gives us, that be careful of who you hear from. Be careful what you hear. And be clear to actually stay connected to the teachings of the spiritual master, the bona fide spiritual master, as Krishna says, who comes in disciplic succession. So there is no mental concoction. Right? This is important because if you look at these bifurcations, why did those bifurcations take place? Why did they take place? In 250 years, there's a lot of time for other desires in the mind to creep in. And what ends up happening is when we have other desires in the mind, our consciousness attracts like consciousness, doesn't it? Some of you, most of us, when we first started practicing Krishna consciousness, we actually found that those people who were no longer conducive to our Krishna consciousness, they seemed to just move away from our life. Or we took a step back because we just couldn't connect with them in the same way. And equally, Krishna sent people in our life who could help us where we're at now and also to invite us to the next level, to take us forward. So similarly, when our consciousness is diverted, when our mind becomes bifurcated into its own little sampradayas, okay, trying to misguide us, okay, this is what happens. How many groups have we got in our mind going on at the same time, telling us, oh no, you know, you could interpret it like this because you feel like having this, and maybe what you feel like having isn't in line with Guru Sadhu Shastra. You know, so this is what Rupa Goswami says in this verse. This is why Prabhupada brings it up, that actually don't make it up. Don't make it up. Stop your mind from creating another 13 or 26 or 54, whatever number you want to give it, different versions of what Krishna is trying to tell you, of the process of how to move forward, how to apply, and what the goal is and what the motive should be. Because when something is left on its own and isn't nurtured, isn't fed, the only thing that happens is it decays. There is no improvement. There's no improvement. Look at that even in our skills, in our habits. Now, one of my patients was telling me last week that he did his own personal study of this. And he said, you know, he's a chess player as a hobby. And he was speaking about how he did an experiment where for 1 year he didn't invest any time in reading about chess, watching other players play who are better than him, in matching or playing with people who are better than him. He simply just played. That's all he did. And he said previously he'd always read books, watched videos, tutorials, competed with people better than him. You know, basically, he was in a conscious process of self-improvement. But the year that he didn't, he said he played just as much. He said sometimes even more, played more games. He applied, he engaged in a repetitive activity. But he said there was no improvement. No improvement. He said in some ways he deteriorated because he actually started maladapting. It's kind of like driving, right? After you pass your test, you start driving and funny habits come in. So, you know, just highlighting this point that we constantly need to be taking stock, improving, listening, hearing, and applying. Not this passive hearing that we have, that we've got so much into a culture of, you know, put on a class and do 50 other things at the same time. How much is going to go in? You know? So online classes haven't been made available so that we, you know, mass consume 5 classes a day and pay attention to hardly any of them. Better you listen to half a class or one class attentively. But this point that the spiritual master gives us warnings, as well as inspiration, guidance, and results, is really important, because we'll only hear those warnings and the inspiration and the guidance and get the proper results if that hearing from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra is across all three and is consistent and regular, so that there isn't space and time for the mind to creep in and create other subgroups and philosophies. Yes, none of us, you know, many of us might be sitting here thinking about these different groups and, yeah, that's not going to sway me. that's not going to sway me. But if you don't know the philosophy, if we don't not just know the philosophy, but know how to apply it to different time, place, and circumstance, which actually really comes from application, experience, and associating with all three types of devotees, those who are more advanced, those who are our peers, and those who we are seeking to serve by sharing with them. If we don't do those things, then we'll just misinterpret, we'll take out of context, and that's essentially what's happening a lot now. It's not just that we have different philosophies, and you know, back in the day, I remember when I joined, the big thing was, you know, who's a real guru, shiksha, diksha, ritvik, all of this stuff, you know, what should the standard be. Now we have lots of different subgroups fragmenting off because people are getting disturbed, because they'll read little bits. You know, one of the dangers of our digital media is people want a shortcut to everything. They want sutra. They just want a quote, right? You want the quote that captures everything. Yeah, give me the whole Bhagavad Gita in a quote. You know, give me the whole Bhagavad Gita in a quote. But a quote is just a quote. You can turn a quote into whatever you like. You know, same patient gave me a quote. You know, he was trying to analyze relationships. And he tried pulling out a quote. He goes, you know, I read this quote. It was so inspiring. He said, what did he say? Love without sex is like sex without love. No, sex without love is like love without sex. Anyway, something like that. And he looked so inspired. I said, you know, that actually doesn't make any sense, because there's so much love without sex. You know, why would you hang on to that as some inspirational quote? And he kind of went, oh, yeah, you're right, actually. He said, but you know, when you read a quote, it just captures you. Yeah, but your mind also has these other hooks, these other things it's picked up. And, you know, we're in a time and in a process where Prabhupada isn't saying, let's all just sit in one room and only associate with devotees. He's like, get strong, get out there, share. But when we share, we also get exposed, right? When you get exposed, you take stuff on. So it's even more important to keep our intelligence from swaying and making its own little, you know, bifurcating into these different groups. So this is Srila Prabhupada's warning. This whole first half is Srila Prabhupada's warning to us that be mindful. That everything I've given you, you know, if you refer to that, then you won't be distracted. You won't misinterpret. You won't be misguided by teachers who have the wrong motives. You won't take what I've said out of context and create a subgroup that starts hating what I've taught because you've lost my message. You won't think that any bodily attribute you have excludes you from devotional service because you've taken a statement which is relative and applied it to the absolute. I mean, this sentence here, an invented devotional attitude simply creates disturbances in the transcendental realm. How do we create a disturbance in the transcendental realm? Especially if we're on the material platform, because an invented devotional attitude would be materialistic, wouldn't it? How can our tiny little invented devotional attitude cause a disturbance in the transcendental realm? Yes, Prabhu? Is there a mic?
The disturbance would be that we could be jeopardizing our own position to go into the eternal. No, I thereby that we would create a negative effect on our own progress, but not only that, we wouldn't be able to get guidance or follow the path that we're supposed to originally have in our heart. The best way. So certainly, it creates a small disturbance in jeopardizing your own goal.
Yeah, deep. Yeah, because we are part of the transcendental. We are ultimately in the transcendental realm. We're surrounded by it. It's within us. So if we go off track, we cause a disturbance. We're important to Krishna. We're important to Krishna. He's all attractive, but he's also attracted to all. So when we go off, it causes a disturbance. It causes a distraction. It's one more thing for them to worry about. Also, invented devotional attitude, as Prabhupada says in this first half of the purport, it's offensive. Offense means aparad. Aparad means without Radharani. The transcendental realm is very disturbed without Radharani. And the other thing is, you know, disturbances in the transcendental realm. If we're not helping, we're causing a disturbance. There's no such thing as just being neutral and just doing our own thing. And we're not completely independent. Even though Krishna is completely satisfied and fully independent, in many ways he's also not independent because he's dependent on our love, ultimately. So it's very powerful. This, we don't realize the ripple effect. We talk about the ripple effect with karma, don't we? Whenever we explain karma and reincarnation, we talk about, you know, desire, exposure, thoughts, feelings, contemplation. You know, we really break it down. Intention, action and result, and the ripple effect, and how one little adjustment can have such a massive impact in this world. This is Prabhupada telling us, actually, the ripple effect goes beyond this world. Okay, it echoes beyond time and space. So we have to be careful. This is his warning. In this first half, before he goes into speaking about the mellows, our real, actual relationship with Krishna, he gives us a warning. Just anchor yourself. Anchor yourself. There will be many distractions. And they will ultimately look, they will look like they're from outside. They will look like they are other people's misinterpretations, other people's attachments, other people's mistakes. But ultimately, they are born of the little tributaries and bifurcations that our mind tries to create, because our mind is our guru to some extent. You know, in Bhagavatam it explains we have three gurus. Before we even come to Krishna consciousness. And, you know, one of them being we learn from around us, we learn from nature. The other one being our own mind coming to conclusions, right? We accept conclusions that our mind comes to. Anuman, right? Logical conclusion. Many people rely, especially if you're smart, you rely on your smarts, don't you? Oh yeah, it makes sense. I think I'll do it. But if your intelligence is cloudy, a lot of rubbish makes sense. Right, and then you just do it. Mataji, Hare Krishna. Can we have the mic here with Sachimata?
It is absolutely right what you just mentioned, that mind goes everywhere. I just give you an example because I think majority of you don't know all these different category of people. Please. But I have seen in my own life, in my childhood, owl and bowl. These are the two groups I have come across in my childhood. And they are nothing but like dressed as in orange clothes. And they would sing songs, and they have a ghunguru in their leg, and they will dance around. And they would sing very lovely songs sometimes, even tears are even coming. So these are my practical experience I have seen in the childhood. But we used to think that, oh my God, they are very God-loving people. Yeah. You know, they are only talking about, only singing about Krishna. But later on, as you can see, in Bengal, really, these people were really prevalent at the time. They were going, and all they were doing, asking donations and all, whatever you give them, rice, dal, groceries, you know, whatever you like, you can give them. They will accept anything and everything. That was their main purpose. So it is absolutely essential. And another thing happened, because of that, Bengal really, in my time, I mean, what I have seen, is not really, especially in affluent class of people, did not accept Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of them, because of these Auliya, Baulias, all these category of people because they were on the street, they were on anywhere, everywhere, coming door to door and singing and dancing and doing bhajans and whatever bhajans they were doing. So it was not, because it was not pure, it didn't have a proper influence to the other people. So that's why Srila Prabhupada repeatedly warning us that it is absolutely essential who we are hearing from. Yeah. Thank you. I just wanted to share this with you.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. It's nice to have real examples of what this might look like because, you know, some of us are yet to, in the room are yet to go to India, right? And yet to go to Mayapur or Vrindavan or Jagannath Puri, and we may come across this and also mistake. We don't want to criticize. This is the thing. It's not that we criticize, but we must know the difference. And that knowing that difference comes from training. Training comes from hearing, serving, being warned, being chastised. But those things must happen, and they must happen regularly. It's very easy to be misled until we've actually really seen. Before seeing the highest thing and experiencing the highest thing, we have to learn how to recognize it, right? Some of you may know of the diamond shop Tiffany's, right? They're famous for selling very, very high-quality jewelry. You'd think they'd know the difference between something which is just manufactured in a laboratory and something which is a real diamond. So I wore a nice quality manufactured diamond ring, and I thought, I'm going to go into Tiffany and just see what's the difference, you know? This is what I'm wearing is kind of sparkly. I got to the counter, and the person serving at the counter literally like grabbed my hand and looked at me and go, oh my God, those are the most amazing diamonds I've ever seen. I was thinking, ha, okay, you're definitely new to this because, you know, really to work in a store like this, you should be able to tell the difference. You're selling the highest thing and you don't recognize it. Now, if we're out there distributing Krishna consciousness, sharing it, whether it's through Srila Prabhupada's books, whether we're giving a class, whether we're distributing prasadam, if we ourselves cannot tell the difference between the highest thing and an imitation, then we're not going to make a very good salesperson, are we? Because he thought I already had the highest thing. He didn't bother trying to sell me anything. He really didn't. He thought, oh, she's already got it. I was thinking, yeah, this is just made in a laboratory. It's like 20 quid. And you can't tell the difference between a 20-pound ring and a 20,000-pound ring. It was interesting. So this is we must hear regularly. And all three, back to this verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, even if a person seems to have attained steadiness in practicing pure bhakti to the Lord, that bhakti is a misfortune if it rejects the rules of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra due to a lack of faith in them. If we don't have faith in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that means our faith is in our own mind and in our own senses. Because our faith has to be placed somewhere. Doesn't it? That's it. Our belief has to be placed somewhere. It can't be suspended in midair. It has to rest somewhere. That's the whole purpose of faith. Is there anyone else who wants to say anything about this particular point of, you know, the pseudo-transcendentalist or pseudo-Vaishnava of the mind? Anybody want this? Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. Do you feel climate that we're in, people don't have the patience, Hare Krishna, have the patience and time to actually take this path because it is a slow process, but people want instant sense gratification or instant fixes, as you said about quick quotes, because they can relate to them, and yet there is no depth.
Mm. That's part of human conditioning. We want a quick fix. We want everything quickly. In one sense, this process isn't slow. In one sense, the process is actually quick. It's instantaneous. We slow it down because we get distracted by other desires and misinterpreting what those things mean because we attach ourselves more to the external constructs than the internal. I mean, even here where Srila Prabhupada says every Krishna-conscious person is constantly endeavoring to utilize different transcendental devices in the service of the Lord. Such a devotee renounces all material enjoyment and completely dedicates himself to the service of his spiritual master and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He may be a perfect celibate, a restrained householder, a regulated vanaprast, or a Tirthandi sannyasi in the renounced order. It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't think Prabhupada could explain it any clearer. Actually, your external circumstances don't matter. Your lifestyle and what occupation you do doesn't matter. The stage of life doesn't matter. But whatever you have available to you, use that in such a way that it becomes a stepping stone for your spiritual life. I mean, look at these four orders. A perfect celibate. Perfect celibate, your relationship with sexual energy is you just don't engage subtly or physically. That's it. You know, everything is aligned with that. A restrained householder. In many ways, that training as a perfect celibate, if it's been done well, sets you up to be a perfect householder. Because in a perfect as a perfect householder, you have to have the skill of taking a highly addictive aspect of the material world and being able to accept it in a healthy way in the service of Krishna to beget children, a healthy expression of it so it keeps family together, but at the same time, knowing when to renounce it as well. But if you have an aversion or attachment, then the addiction remains. Okay? And then it carries through into vanaprast and also into sannyas, just on a subtle level. So just understanding, just there's some basic acceptance that, believe Prabhupada when he says, you can become Krishna conscious regardless of your circumstances. Just make sure you are constantly endeavoring to utilize different transcendental devices in the service of the Lord. Because everything is actually a transcendental device. It's only made material because of our vision. So yeah, be patient. Good things come to those who apply themselves, not just those who wait. It's not just going to fall out of the sky. I'm going to take some more questions in a minute. I just want to read the second half. So things then take a turn, because Prabhupada's created a foundation for us so we can then understand and accept what he says next. Because, you know, tomorrow you will hear the next few verses which go more into the actual transcendental relationship. So Srila Prabhupada prepares us. This is, again, Guru's mercy, preparation. The purport in presenting this verse necessitates explaining the comparative positions of the transcendental mellows known as Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. All these rasas or mellows are situated on the transcendental platform. Pure devotees take shelter of one of them and thus progress in spiritual life. Actually, one can take shelter of such spiritual mellows only when one is completely uncontaminated by material attachment. When one is completely free from material attachment, the feelings of the transcendental mellows are awakened in the heart of the devotee. That is Swarup Siddhi, the perfection of one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Swarup Siddhi, the eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, may be situated in any one of the transcendental mellows. Each and every one of them is as perfect as the others. But by comparative study, an unbiased person can realize that the mellow of servitorship is better than the mellow of neutrality, that the mellow of fraternity is better than the mellow of servitorship, that the parental mellow is better than that of fraternity, and that above all other mellows is the mellow of conjugal love. However, these are all spiritually situated on the same platform, because all these relationships of perfection in love are based on a central point, Krishna. These mellows cannot be compared to the feelings one derives from demigod worship. Krishna is one, but the demigods are different. They are material. Love for Krishna cannot be compared to material love for different demigods. Because Mayavadis are on the material platform, they recommend the worship of Shiva or Durga. And they say that worship of Kali and Krishna are the same. However, on the spiritual platform, there is no demigod worship. The only worshipable object is Krishna. Therefore, although there is no difference between a devotee in Shantaras or Dasyaras, Vatsalyaras or Madhuryaras, one can still make a comparative study of the intensity of love in these different transcendental positions. For example, it may be said that Dasyaras is better than Shantaras, yet transcendental love of God is there in both of them. Similarly, we can judge that love of Godhead in fraternity is better than love of Godhead in neutrality and servitorship. Similarly, love of Godhead in parental affection is better than love in fraternity. And as stated before, love of God in the conjugal ras is superior to that in the parental ras. The analysis of different types of love of Godhead has been made by expert acharyas who know all about devotional service on the transcendental platform. Unfortunately, inexperienced and unauthorized persons in the mundane world not understanding the transcendental position of pure love, try to find some material fault in the transcendental process. This is simply impudence on the part of spiritually inexperienced people. Such fault-finding is symptomatic of unfortunate mundane wranglers. So what Srila Prabhupada preparing us for? Going back to Guru Sadhu Shastra, going back to a healthy, regular endeavor to utilize everything in Krishna's service, but also connect with Guru, is essential even when we go internal and start to become aware of our Swarup. It's essential because Guru is there all the time. So we have, you know, we have Guru in the heart, Paramatma, and external manifestation is the different spiritual masters we have. You know, the spiritual master who brings us to Krishna consciousness, the Shiksha Guru, the instructing spiritual master, the Diksha Guru, the one who connects us to the Parampara, to make sure that we are receiving mercy and knowledge in an uncontaminated and purified way, so that our motive remains uncontaminated and our motive remains clear and pure. But that's also there when one wakes up to which mellow and which rasa they have their particular relationship with Krishna. And because before spontaneous devotional service, where, you know, you love Krishna so much, you can't wait to see him, before bhav, there's a regulated aspect to this. And that regulated aspect requires still the anchor of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But even when one really starts to understand who they are, you still have Guru, because we always follow someone. We always follow someone. We are the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And the servant of the servant of the servant, the more times you're removed, the deeper your ecstasy can go. Why? In this material world, the further you are from something or someone, what happens? The experience gets diluted, doesn't it? Why? Because barriers of time, barriers of distance, and barriers such as envy and pride, they block things. Subtle and the gross block things. In the spiritual dimension, time doesn't put up a block. Time brings us closer to Krishna. Space doesn't put up a block, because say space expands and contracts to come closer, to bring us closer to Krishna. There's no envy or pride. There's no separation between us and the person we're serving, or them and the person they're serving. So there's a completely direct, clear pathway for the loving exchanges of the heart. So one can be at a distance in terms of time and space or position in the spiritual world. And that's when you're living in it, even in this world, and feel great ecstasy. Many of you will have experienced when you're serving devotees, you feel great joy. Feel great joy. And you may even wonder, where's this joy coming from? It's deep. And the devotees you love the most, you'll feel the greatest joy. Because especially when we serve those who are deeply connected, it's like their hearts spilling over with so much love for Krishna, it can't help but splash us in the face. We're like, wow, that's amazing. You know, so this relationship with Guru, if we can't recognize Guru here, then how will we recognize Guru eternally? It may come in different forms, as different personalities, but we won't recognize it. So this is our practice ground. And this sentence, however, these are all spiritually situated on the same platform, because all these relationships of perfection in love are based on a central point, Krishna. This is our transcendental love triangle that we try and create in our lives. Nobody wants a love triangle. You can watch a movie about it, you can hear a song about it. Don't want it in your own life, in your friendships, in your romance, in anything. You don't want a love triangle. But when it comes to Krishna consciousness, we do want a love triangle. Because having a love triangle with a person who loves both of you more than you could ever love yourselves is the perfection of life. Because then you will always do best by that person, because you're doing best by Krishna. And we get to practice that based on Guru's instructions. So this, when Prabhupada says when one is completely free from material attachment, attachment is based on what we think our relationship with something or someone is, isn't it? So Guru, Sadhu and Shastra is there to illuminate our minds and hearts, to help us to understand what our actual relationship with everything and everyone is, so then we're not attached or averse, but we have affection based on service. So we have about 7 to 10 minutes left. There's a lot in this purport, and I can understand why, because the next few verses do discuss topics which cannot be understood by the mind. But I'd love to hear from some of you your realizations, your comments, any questions you have. So if we can pass the mic around, if you can raise your hands if you have something. Prabhu here.
Thank you for the class, Mataji.
Hi, Krishna.
I had two questions. I don't know if you want to... Shall I ask both?
Yeah.
You were talking about different groups that have come up in ISKCON also, and we heard the Ritviks have come up. I was just wondering, what statement or quote do they like that allowed them to go this direction? Do they like have a thing that they took from Shastra or...
You know, when Srila Prabhupada was physically here, sometimes he could not physically be present to perform the actual yajna for the initiation ceremony. So he would send the name, and he would chant on beads, and he would send these by mail. If any of you have read Srila Prabhupada's letters, they're often saying, you know, your new name is Krishna Das, and, you know, I've chanted on your beads, take this. You know, when somebody else would perform the actual yajna. So the Ritvik mindset, in a nutshell, is that everybody else... So this is called a Ritvik. The person who does the yajna on behalf of the spiritual master is known as the Ritvik. Like, they're almost like a extension, right? So the Ritvik philosophy is no... Srila Prabhupada didn't give anybody else authority to be a Diksha Guru. What he just wanted us to be was Ritviks. That we're just... So actually, we're just initiating on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. Everybody's a Srila Prabhupada disciple, and that's it. Now, actually, this is and mainly after that, the main thing is they just go around criticizing everybody, usually for human happenings and human faults, or they just make it up. That's what criticizers do. They just make stuff up most of the time. Or they'll take something really quite simple and magnify it. But, you know, they're also criticizing Srila Prabhupada. In one sense, because to say that your Prabhupada is the Jagat Guru, he's a pure devotee, but to say he's not qualified to make other teachers, that's like the biggest insult. You're a really amazing teacher, but you're not good enough to make other teachers. You're not good enough to make other pure devotees. That's not, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. So rather than getting upset, fighting, I think it's helpful when we have more of the proper explanations, just like with the controversial statements. We can sit there arguing with people who have taken issue with controversial statements. The arguments aren't going to achieve much. I actually think it would be, my personal opinion is, I think we need to put some effort in, if there are people out there interested in taking the controversial statements, but actually producing something which proactively gives context and explanation to controversial statements, so that they're not taken out of context. Because even if you look around quotes, there's controversial quotes as well. Donald Trump comes out with them left, right and center. Some people love them, some people hate them. You know? So that's the Ritvik thing. Yeah.
Thank you, that helped a lot. Thank you. And the second question is, I mean, we get this on the streets also, in Sankirtan, or, you know, how do we respond when people say, I don't want to join another cult? And this is not, I mean, this is not a cult in my understanding. So how would you respond, or how should we?
Prabhupada used to actually use the term cult, because in its proper sense, it has two meanings. One is the sense, it's shorthand for culture. I don't want to join a culture. We're all part of a culture. You can either join a culture unconsciously and just get carried away, right? Every time somebody turns on a movie or a series, why are TV series and box sets more popular? People want to live vicariously. They want to be part of a culture, the culture of that particular program. That becomes their family, their life. Everybody. So you can either do it consciously, or you can just get carried away vicariously. Then there's the kind of more derogatory or negative way of looking at a cult, where you join something, a culture, but you have no choice in the matter. You're indoctrinated. You can't ask questions. You can't doubt. Prabhupada said doubt is a sign of intelligence. Ask anything you want. You know, one of the things, you know, we do a lot of service with students, And you know, I love university preaching. It's like just students are just open-minded, open-hearted, but also intelligent. And one thing that often students will say is, you know, I've always been interested in spiritual life, but when I go to other places, we're not allowed to ask questions. It's seen as criticism if we ask a question. But criticism is more about attitude than what you say. There's a very big difference between somebody who asks a question to fight, a person who asks a question to criticize, and a person who asks to know the truth. So you can also, when someone's asking, I don't want to join another cult, you can also make an assessment. Is this person sincere? That they have some interest. They do want to know the truth, but there's just some fear. Let me take some time out of compassion to explain this to them. Or are they just completely shut down? And it doesn't matter what I say, they're just going to find another reason to be disturbed and another reason to criticize. And it'll give them more fuel to go out there and criticize what we do. Yeah? Hare Krishna. Anyone else? No? Okay. Oh, yeah, this one.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you for the class. You were mentioning earlier how we should be careful what we hear, who we hear from. Oftentimes on book distribution, we have to listen to a lot of people, their ideas, their opinions. How could we protect ourselves from this?
How do we protect ourselves when we have to hear a lot, and what we're hearing is often that person is sharing their troubles, right? And it may not, on the surface, be very Krishna conscious. It doesn't require two people to make an interaction, to both people to be devotional, to make the interaction devotional. Even if one of you offers everything you're hearing as an act of service, it becomes a spiritual interaction. But at the same time, we don't want to be negligent, right? We don't want to assume we have an adhikar or a qualification beyond our qualification. If we're very, it's just like, when we're in the hospital, okay? It's funny, we're surrounded by disease all the time, and yet we don't really get sick. That comes from two types of qualification. One is we're conscious to look after our health. Yeah, we eat properly, we sleep properly, we take our vaccinations, whatever it is we need to take, we wear protective gear depending on the task at hand, we keep a distance, etc. But the other qualification is also the blessings that we get, because that's our service. That's our service, so we're protected by that. So we also have a spiritual immune system. And our spiritual immune system, when it's strong, it also protects the body and the mind. So if you're reading and hearing, it actually gives you a protective layer. And that protective layer acts also as a filter. So everything you hear from others, it's not so much that, oh yeah, let me carry your baggage. It's more, let me see how I can help you to either decide whether you need to carry this, whether you need to drop this, or whether we need to transform this into something else. So if you're strong in your spiritual life and your intelligence is strong, then you won't get so affected. Sometimes you might just take stuff on for them and just throw it away. You can become that expert at it. And they'll feel different. Like, wow, when I speak to the devotees, I feel different. Yeah, but you've got to protect yourself. Okay? Okay, we are on time. It's 8:45. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.